Hello, everybody. Welcome to College Hoops Chat, your weekly college basketball radio show here on WVOX 1460 AM in New Rochelle, New York. My favorite radio station. I'm Jim Massano, your host. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for being part of the show. All right, folks, we're here to talk about week three of the college basketball season. It's called Feast Week because there's a bunch of big tournaments that go on during the Thanksgiving break. So there was a ton of basketball on every single night over the past week. Some tremendous games, some top teams battling it out. It seems to me there are bigger and better games now in November than there used to be because teams are trying to get those quad one wins for the NCAA tournament so they can get a better seed in the tournament. So there's a lot less teams doing an all cupcake non-conference early season schedule. So there was some tremendous games. You have teams like, for instance, Gonzaga, Michigan State. Every game they had practically in their non-conference schedules, they're playing a top team. That really didn't happen 10, 20 years ago. It's really interesting. So what happened in Feast Week? Well, there was a ton of really, really exciting games, but a couple of teams really did awesome. They balled out. They separated themselves from other teams and kind of showed the country, showed the college basketball world that they're really good, maybe when people weren't quite sure how good these teams were. The first team would be Purdue. Now, last year, Purdue was terrific. They were one of the victims of the Sweet 16 to St. Peter's. When St. Peter's got on that magical run, they beat Purdue. I thought Purdue last year was going to the Final Four. I thought they were that good. But they lost three guys from that Sweet 16 team that were huge parts of the rotation. Even one other guy that was in the rotation. But Jaden Ivey's in the NBA. Trevion Williams was a star. 12 points, 7 rebounds a game. Sasha Stevanovic, 10 points a game, a great three-point shooter. They're all gone. So nobody knew what to think about this Purdue team this year. Could they be a top team in the Big Ten again this year? I wasn't sure. I didn't even have them in my top 25 to start the season, and a lot of experts in the field, way more than me, didn't have them in the top 25. Well, one thing Purdue still has is a giant guy named Zach Edey. He's like 7'4", and he's a star. They also have great half-court offense because they're extremely well coached by Matt Painter. The coach didn't go anywhere. He's still there coaching up his team, and they play great defense. Kind of unbelievable, though, what Matt Painter does with this team. So here's a crazy stat I saw, because I'm about to tell you how great Purdue did this weekend. They don't have a single guy on their roster who was in the top 100 players in the country in his high school class. So when they were coming out of high school, they weren't ranked in the top 100 players in America. Not one guy on their roster is one of those top 100 players. And yet, they went this weekend and swept three really good teams. We're going to talk about it in a second. A couple other things. They have two freshmen starting in their backcourt. One guy happened to be Mr. Indiana. I guess he still didn't get ranked in the top 100 players. But so here's Purdue, right? A team that was really great last year that kind of underwhelmed a little by losing in the Sweet 16. They got caught up in the St. Peter's run. But this week, Purdue was unbeaten. They go into Feast Week. They're playing in one of these tournaments out in the West, the Phil Knight tournaments. There were two of them. The first round, they played West Virginia, 80-68, pretty solid performance. Okay, nice game. Purdue probably should have won that game. But then the next two games kind of blew everybody away. Purdue beats Gonzaga, 84-66. Blew them out. Blew out Gonzaga. And Gonzaga, by the way, was in the state of Oregon, not too far from their home court. So it was a Northwest tournament because the Gonzaga probably had fans there. They blew Gonzaga off the floor. Okay, then what happened in the finals of the Phil Knight tournament they were in? They blew out Duke. Now, I know Duke is young, but they still have, on paper, some of the biggest talent in the country. The freshmen they have, they may be freshmen, but they're like ranked number like 2, 3, 4 best players in America last year coming into college. So they blew out the Duke 75-56. So everybody in the college basketball world is talking about Purdue. They're skyrocketing in everybody's rankings. And they're now a team to keep an eye on, folks. Purdue, a dynamite team. All right, who else overperformed and kind of shocked everybody? Well, how about locally, one state away, UConn. UConn beat Oregon, 83-59, blowout. They blew out Alabama, who's really good, by the way, 82-67. And then they blew out Iowa State, 71-53. So UConn basically had a up until this point, had a pretty easy schedule. But then this weekend, after they blew everybody out previously on their schedule, they went to this tournament, played top teams like Oregon, Alabama, and Iowa State, and blew them all out. Hey, Big East folks, I would keep a close eye on UConn. I always thought Creighton was going to be the best team this year in the Big East. I still think they are, but UConn is right there with them. They're now the two best teams in the Big East. Another team that did great this weekend was Arizona. Arizona, a team that was really great last year. Great ride last year. They were a fun team to watch. They're really explosive offensively. They're really, really well coached. Well, they went out and beat Cincinnati, San Diego State, and Creighton. And Creighton's great. They beat all three of them in their tournament. So Arizona, another team that swept through the weekend, swept through Feast Week. Arizona's moved up on everybody's polls. And then two other teams played really well and got a lot of quality wins. Tennessee Volunteers. They have a one bad loss on their schedule, but they beat Butler, USC, and Kansas. I'll say it again. Butler, USC, Kansas. Those are three really good college basketball teams. Tennessee did well. And one other team that I was kind of shocked by, I didn't expect much from this team, but Oklahoma. The Oklahoma Sooners beat Nebraska, Seton Hall, and Ole Miss. All three very good teams. And that's a nice weekend for Oklahoma. Maybe Oklahoma's a lot better than people think. Hardly anybody had Oklahoma on their radar. So there's some other teams that played well, but did get a loss. So you have like a team like Creighton. They beat Texas Tech, who's really good. And they beat Arkansas, who I think is terrific, by the way. But then they lost Arizona. We just talked about that. But Creighton had a nice feast week. Alabama beat Michigan and North Carolina. I'm sorry, Michigan State and North Carolina. We know Michigan State's really good. We've talked about Michigan State's probably got some of the most quality wins so far of the early season. Michigan State and UNC. Alabama looked good, and then they lost to UConn. That was the one bad thing on their record. Iowa State surprised people. They beat Villanova and North Carolina. They lost to UConn, too. And then Arkansas. Like I said, I really liked Arkansas. They beat Louisville. That's not much. Louisville stinks. But they also beat San Diego State, who's very, very good, and lost to Creighton. And one other team, Gonzaga got two nice wins. They beat Portland State, who turned out to be pretty good, and Xavier, but lost to Purdue, who everybody's talking about as a rising team. I mentioned Arkansas because the best game I saw in Feast Week was Arkansas-Creighton. It was 90-87. 90 for Creighton, 87 for Arkansas. A back-and-forth, incredibly well-played game. Ton of talent on the court. The kind of talent you would see in the Elite Eight or the Final Four. Yes, Creighton and Arkansas are that good. Keep an eye on them. Creighton, who got the win, a tough win. Baylor Shireman, 20 points. What a huge addition from the transfer portal. Ryan Cockbrenner, 21 points. He's just a huge, big force in the middle at center for Creighton. And then you have Ryan Nebhart, who was terrific in that game. He was basically the key to the game for Creighton. They wouldn't have won if he didn't have a big game. He's a point guard. He's a combo guard. He's so talented. He can do it all. 25 points. On the other side, Arkansas surprised me because all I heard about in the offseason is that Arkansas had a great freshman named Nick Smith. You got to see Nick Smith. Well, I turned in the game. Nick Smith was hurt. So I saw Anthony Black, who, believe it or not, is the second best freshman on Arkansas. And he looked like Magic Johnson out there. 26 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. Anthony Black is a heck of a player and a freshman. And only his fifth game against a top team like Creighton, played amazing. Arkansas is loaded with really athletic talent. Another team to keep an eye on, folks. Okay, another game people are talking about, particularly up here in the Northeast, and I think people were shocked by it. I certainly was surprised by it. But Siena, one of Iona College, I'm sorry, I gotta get it right, folks. Iona University, one of Iona University's rivals, Siena, every year. They're always a tough team for Iona. Beat Seton Hall, 60-55. Really good defense. They played real tough. They didn't back down, and they pulled off a really great win for Siena over Seton Hall, who I still think is a very good team. We're going to talk a little later about that. North Carolina. You know I love North Carolina. You know I talk about North Carolina an awful lot here on the show. They lost two games. They were the number one team in the nation. In some of the rankings, they plummeted. They lost two games. They did beat Portland, who was a pretty good team, but then they lost to Iowa State, and they lost in four overtimes. In a bizarre game, it wasn't the most well-played game, but it was certainly close. Alabama versus UNC. UNC lost in the fourth overtime. My family watched the whole game. It was long and a little bit painful, especially when they lost. And now North Carolina lost two games, and they got to play Indiana this week at Indiana. Ouch. So North Carolina has a lot of work to do. They got to get better. They're not playing as well as their talent looks on paper. One other team I want to talk about before my friend Jaden Daly calls. We're going to do something fun. We're going to go through the top 10 teams in the New York metropolitan area. Jaden Daly and I. Jaden Daly from A Daily Dose of Hoops. So he'll be calling a little bit. Villanova. We all know on this show, since this show started, Villanova's been great. Basically, the last decade, Villanova's been great. All we know, and the fans of the Big East, is Villanova's great. Villanova's 2-5. 2-5. Now, they do have probably their two best players out. Cam Whitmore is out, and he's a star. Five-star freshman is out. He should be coming back soon. But right now, Villanova's got some real issues. I watched them play against Oregon, where they lost. They lost three games this weekend. They lost to Iowa State, Portland, and Oregon. They got swept in their feast week. They also have lost to Temple and Michigan State. 2-5 record for Villanova. The only two games they've won is against LaSalle and Delaware State. So we're not really used to Villanova not being a strong team, but here we go. Villanova's struggling. I think they'll get better. I think they'll be okay by the time the Big East comes around if they get their whole team healthy. But right now, Villanova's 2-5. All right, I think we have Jaden on the line. So let me just say, ACC versus Big Ten Challenge starts this week. A lot of great basketball games with the ACC versus the Big Ten. I mentioned before, Indiana and UNC on Wednesday night. All right, so let me go to the phone line because we're going to do something fun now with my friend Jaden Daly. Jaden, are you on the line?
How are you, man?
Great, I'm doing great. So did you sit in front of the TV for like 9 hours a day during feast week and watch a lot of basketball, or did you get around and see some games?
To be honest with you, I was primarily football for most of the weekend, especially watching Michigan destroy Ohio State again, which was always fun.
Oh, so you enjoyed that. Oh, so it's funny.
Absolutely.
So I watched that game. Of course, I think you probably know my son goes to the University of South Carolina, and they beat Clemson. That was a huge win for our family,
Jane. Absolutely.
Very. I will tell you that there were Misanos dancing around the den as they won that game.
That's awesome. I hope Eugene and Mike had a great Thanksgiving.
We did. We had a great one. How about you?
So far, so good. We really didn't do much, but I enjoyed it.
All right, good, good. All right, so I did watch a ton of college basketball. Almost like, I think if someone saw how many hours I put in to watching college basketball during feast week, they thought there was something wrong with me. But nevertheless, I did. So, I mean, the two teams that blew me away, and one is a team that you definitely cover because you're a big fan of the Big East, UConn played really well this weekend.
Absolutely, they did. I didn't get to see much of the Huskies, but very impressive with the wins over Alabama and Iowa State. And I forget who they played in the first round of the PK85. Was it Oregon?
Yes. They first.
Okay.
Yeah, Oregon first. And they blew everybody out. Everybody they played, they blew out.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting. Any other team that everybody's talking about, I'm sure you see it online, is Purdue. Purdue just went through their tournament, beat everybody pretty badly, and looked really great doing it.
Yeah, Purdue is always going to be a force in the Big Ten. And if Zach Edey can be more of an offensive force as opposed on top of his already exceptional defense, you got to love the Boilermakers in the Big Ten. Obviously, they bring back a good portion of last year's team that lost in the Sweet 16 to St. Peter's. So they're motivated by that, and I like them a lot as the year goes on.
I do too. All right, so we're going to do something fun. You are one of the well-known people that covers the New York metropolitan area and college basketball, so I thought you were perfect to do this with me. I've been, as you know, following the New York metropolitan and college basketball since the 70s, so this is good fun for us. We're going to do the top 10, Jaden and I, college basketball teams in the New York metropolitan area. As Jaden informed me today, that goes from Monmouth and Rider up north to Fairfield and Sacred Heart, all the schools in between. So you got schools in New Jersey, Connecticut, and of course, New York. All right, Jaden, how about we go with our first three first? Tell me your top three teams in the New York metropolitan area.
Well, I think right now you can't ignore what St. John's has done starting 7-0. Even though the schedule has been a little soft for Mike Anderson and the Red Storm, but the wins over Temple and Syracuse at Barclays Center have provided a foundation for this Red Storm team. I've been very impressed by Joel Soriano and the job that he's done. He's leading the nation in rebounds per game. He's picked up 6 double-doubles this season in 7 games. He's reminding me a lot of not only what Armando Bacot did last year in North Carolina, but more recently in this area, what Angel Delgado did for 4 years at Seton Hall. And if Soriano can keep that up, there's no telling what the St. John's team can do. And also on the same roster, I like Davy Jones a lot, the DePaul transfer, who's proven to be a steady shooter and lethal scorer whenever he gets the ball in his hands.
I agree. So I have St. John's number one as well. I agree. Really nice wins against Nebraska, Temple, and Syracuse. So they also got some other wins, too. They beat everybody they played, so I ranked them first. And I agree that Soriano is, since he started at Fordham until now, one of the more improved players I've seen in the whole country.
No question.
All right, who's your number two?
I'm still going to say Rutgers because I think the Scarlet Knights have the potential to be something really good in the Big Ten. The one loss to Temple worried me a little bit, and I'm still waiting to see what Steve Peichel's team can do against a step up in competition. I'm really looking forward to watching them against Miami and seeing how they fare against Jim Larranaga. But Rutgers is probably a little better off than I thought they would be at this point. They just got Caleb McConnell back. They could very well get Paul Mulcahy back for the Miami game, too. And when this team is at full strength, it's as good as anyone in the Big Ten.
I agree. And I struggled with who I was going to pick second because I think Rutgers might even be the best team in the New York metropolitan area, but you got to go with St. John's. I agree, being 7-0. But I'm going to put Seton Hall second because I have to penalize Rutgers for having a cupcake schedule. And Seton Hall went out and beat Memphis, which was a really quality win. They're 4-3. So I made Seton Hall second, although after that loss to Siena, you got to wonder a little bit about Seton Hall. But I have Seton Hall 2 and Rutgers 3. What about you?
Okay, I don't even have Seton Hall 3. I have Hofstra 3rd.
Wow.
Because Hofstra started out really strong, defeated Iona, picked up another strong win over George Washington, just beat Quinnipiac, the first team to beat the Bobcats this season. Aaron Estrada has picked up right where he left off last year. I like Hofstra's potential. They have a big game coming up Wednesday at George Mason, another strong major. And I have Seton Hall 4th. Nothing against Shaheen Holloway and the Pirates, but these are the growing pains that a lot of people close to the program expected with a relatively new roster, new to the way Shaw wants to play. Hasn't had a healthy roster all season. Alexis Yetna is still out. So the front court has been taxed a little bit.
Yeah, they miss him. They really miss him.
Playing out of position, absolutely.
Yeah.
But Seton Hall has the class and the edge over most teams in the area. So I have Hofstra at 3 and Seton Hall at 4.
All right, so I have Hofstra 4. So we're not that far apart. I like Hofstra being 6-2. They beat Iona, Princeton, George Washington, San Jose State, UNC, Greensboro, Quinnipiac. Those are all pretty good wins. Hofstra's off to a very nice start. All right, number 5, I got Iona.
Yeah, me too. Iona, even after the loss in Las Vegas to Santa Clara, one of the top mid-majors in the area, we see them firsthand, and we'll get them 3 times in 5 days. That's going to be a very big stretch with Niagara and Canisius coming in to open MAC play, and then a week from tomorrow, St. Louis coming into the Heinz Center, a team that was ranked in the preseason and is among the favorites to win the A-10. I've been very impressed by Danis Jenkins this season to start the year. I want to see how this team develops without Quinn Slezinski. Let's see how long he's out with the high ankle sprain.
I agree. I'll talk Iona. I'm going to be talking Iona more on the show. So I'm not that concerned about the 2-2 Iona because Quinn Slezinski is out right now. He's a key player for their rotation. Number 6, I have Fordham. What about you?
I haven't seen Fordham this year, so your assessment of the Rams is a little better than mine. I have Manhattan at number 6.
Wow.
At 2-3, they're coming into their own. Rashawn Storrs kept most of the team together, which a lot of people have ignored. Obviously, the big storyline going into the season was how the team would cope after the school decided to move on from Masiello and Jose Perez going into the portal right after that. But early returns from the Jaspers have shown that maybe this team will be able to salvage the season. Josh Roberts looks like the best big man in the MAC right now, Jim.
He does. He does look pretty good. And Nelly Jr. Joseph, I don't know what's going on there. He's got to play better. Normally, I would think he would be the best player in the MAC. But I get it. I think Manhattan's playing better than everybody expected. All right, so you have them 6. So let's both do, you go first, do 7, 8, 9, 10, because we're running out of time.
Okay, 7, Fordham. 8 would be Wagner. I'm going to have Stony Brook at 9, and as far as 10, I'm going to go with Monmouth, even though they're 0-7. I think the Hawks have potential.
All right. Interesting, because I struggled with Monmouth versus Ryder as 10th. I gave it away. I went with Ryder. But let me go through mine. So as I said, I had Fordham at 6. Number 7, I have Wagner. I was pretty impressed that they beat Fairfield. That was pretty impressive. And Temple, right? Wagner beat Temple, and they're 4-2. So I ranked them 7. At 8, I have Fairfield because they got the Towson win. They're 2-5, mm-hmm. but I still like Fairfield's team. I think they're a good team. I think they're better than their 2-5 record. Number 9, I've been impressed with all the change, tremendous change. St. Peter's is 4-2. They beat Bucknell, mostly cupcake schedule, but I'm going to go with St. Peter's at number 9 because they're 4-2. And like you with Monmouth, I'm going to go at Ryder 10 because I still think Ryder's very good. They're just off to a bad start. But to their credit, they did have a pretty tough schedule.
Absolutely, and they almost beat Providence.
Right, exactly. So that's my time. It's a great job we did here, Jaden. We ranked. We're pretty close, but it's good we were off, right, a little bit. We didn't have exactly the same top 10. Now we got a couple months to see how all these teams do.
Absolutely, Jim. Looking forward to watching it all unfold, as always.
Everybody, so before the music comes, Iona this weekend. I'm anxious to see about Niagara and Canisius. Don't think they may both be a little better than we thought. I'll be interested to see when they come into Iona. And Iona, if they don't have Kaczynski, it'll be interesting.
Absolutely. Niagara almost beat St. John's. Keep an eye on Noah Thomas.
I agree. All right. Jaden, great job. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Jim, my man, always a pleasure. You too.
Thanks. Okay, folks, we're going to the commercial break, and then we're going to talk about Niagara and Canisius. We'll be right back.
They're playing basketball.
Okay, folks, we are back on College Hoops Chat, and we have a friend of the show on the line calling from the Buffalo area. That is our friend Rachel Lindsay. Rachel, how are you?
Hi, how are you? How was your Thanksgiving?
Very great. How about you?
It was very relaxing. Watched a lot of basketball, watched a lot of soccer, watched a lot of football, watched a lot of hockey.
I didn't watch any hockey, but I watched the first three like you did, although more basketball and football. My son goes to University of South Carolina. We beat Clemson, so I'm still on cloud 9 about that.
There you go.
All right, so tell everybody about yourself. You're a reporter up in Buffalo.
Yeah, well, my fifth season covering college sports with the Buffalo News. My primary focuses are the University of Buffalo, Canisius College, Niagara University of the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference, and St. Bonaventure of the A-10. So we've got the overlap between football and basketball here. Very busy time of year. I got to go out and see Canisius UB last night, watched Niagara during Thanksgiving when they were in Ireland. So there's a lot coming together very quickly for a lot of teams right now in the early stages of college basketball season.
Well, that's great. So it's great that you called because we have Niagara and Canisius coming in this weekend to play in New Rochelle, where the station is located, against mm-hmm. Iona University. And there should be some interesting games. I think they'll be very competitive games. So you called to help us understand better about Niagara and Canisius. So let's start with Niagara. Tell us about them.
Yeah, Niagara, you know, they're like, I will tell you this, you know, preface this by saying all four of the college basketball teams, the big four as we call them up in Western New York, were impacted by roster turnover with the transfer portal, with the extra COVID year. Niagara's doing that. They're trying to get their lineup together. But when they played in Ireland last week in the Dublin tournament, you know, the Metro A Sun Challenge, they showed a lot of consistency against Stetson and Central Arkansas, especially against Stetson, another one of those mid-major teams that was really supposed to break out early this season. And then Noah Thomason, who, you know, he's coming. He's taken a lot of the pressure off Sam Yorio in his role in the offense, and he's really emerged as a big name on a roster full of new names. He's averaging 16.2 points per game for Niagara, and he's really become their focal point. Again, he's taken a lot of pressure off Sam Yorio, another guy, 6'7" wing, who really sparked the offense for Niagara last season, which has allowed Sam to take a little more of a defensive role. He's had 7 block shots so far this season. He's had about 15-20 offensive rebounds. So Sam's becoming better at defense on both ends of the court. And this summer, Sam got some international experiences playing in the Maccabi games over in Israel. So he saw a really high-level competition and brought that back as well.
Okay, good. So I was impressed with Niagara playing St. John's very close as well. They gave them a real game. They were in that game, and St. John's, Jaden and I, Jaden Daly and I, just ranked them the best team in the New York metropolitan area. So that was a good game for Niagara. They looked really good. So, and I think they're well coached. I think Greg Paulus is a very good coach.
Yeah, you know, St. John's game, I hadn't gotten to watch St. John's this season before the Niagara game, but it's interesting. St. John's was, I noticed they were really going inside, right? You know, Niagara kind of forcing them to shoot the three. They were, what, St. John's, what, 3 for 15 or 16 on 3-point attempts?
Right.
And in the second half, Niagara really held its own and, you know, may have opened some eyes against the Power 6 opponent, especially in that second half. It seemed like Niagara got more inside-in opportunities, capitalized more on those. You know, I think they were, you know, I think they were at 14 for 32 on shooting and only shot like 4 3-pointers in the second half. But you think about it, it was a smart because you create more chances going inside and driving the lane and penetrating than chucking up shots from long range. So it also told me Niagara's getting a little more comfortable with that inside game, really asserting itself inside, especially against a Power 6 team like St. John's. I mean, St. John's, they have a reputation. You know, they've got clout. And I thought that was a really good showing, especially after kind of trying to find their legs early in a blowout against Maryland. St. John's gave them a little better gauge of where they can stand.
I agree. I think Niagara's getting better. Folks, Friday night, 7 p.m., December 2nd, Iona University at home against Niagara. Should be a good game. I think that's going to be a very contested game. All right, now let's go to Sunday. Sunday, December 4th, 1 p.m., Canisius. Tell us about Canisius.
I watched Canisius. I've seen them twice this season. They beat St. Bonaventure in overtime. In overtime, they came out very, very aggressive against the Bonnies earlier this month. I think held them to 1 of 7 shooting in the overtime session in the first 4.5 minutes. Just really limited their quality chances. But then yesterday against Buffalo, I saw more question marks than I did answers about Canisius. And that's it's not a good time to have this when they have to turn the tide with, you know, the Metro schedule starting this week. They got this really nice boost from that overtime win with the momentum against St. Bonaventure. They haven't been able to carry it. You know, they're playing Siena on Friday night. Siena's coming off wins against Florida State and Seton Hall. And, I mean, I think if Canisius doesn't get it together, Siena's going to take it to them as well. And it was disappointing to see that. You know, Canisius, they're a team that they like to possess the ball. They like to grind other teams down defensively. That's kind of a Reggie Witherspoon trademark. But also, they have to create more inside chances because UB threw a 2-3 zone at them yesterday. And they scored, I think, 24 of their 66 points against UB. Only 24 were in the paint. That should be an area of concern for Canisius. They've got to get more inside production. Again, you can't just keep chucking up long-range shots and hope they're going to hit. Another issue Canisius faces, they don't have a fully healthy Jaco Fritz, a center from the Netherlands who's coming back from off-season surgery. He had a lower body injury that really limited him early in the season. So they've got to create some inside play early. They just can't count on their guards to do it. And a guy like Jaco Fritz, once he's healthy, could really add reinforcement to Jordan Henderson and Jameer Moultrie, two guys who've really become scoring leaders and offensive play leaders this season. They just, you know, they really, really need to build their depth and do it quickly as they prepare for the Metro schedule.
I agree. It's funny, you know, I looked at Niagara's stats and I looked at their schedule and I was encouraged that they played St. John so close, but it's the opposite with Canisius, where they played a good Buffalo team from the MAC, the other MAC conference, and they got blown off the court 86-66. They also lost to Cornell. Really, the highlight of their season has been St. Bonaventure win in overtime. Other than that, it hasn't been such a great season for Canisius.
It's just tough for them because there is talent on that team. They're getting a new roster together like a lot of other teams in college basketball, seeing the turnover, but there's one missing piece. You know, again, I think it's the inside play. I think they need a stronger, you know, inside presence. I think, again, a healthy Jaco Fritz will help that. I think Jordan Mislenikoff, if they push him a little further, he's got size, he's got nice moves. You know, he's more of a wing player, but, you know, I'm not getting paid to coach like Reggie Witherspoon is, but I just think that's what was missing against them. Even one of the players, is Jameer Moultrie, after the game said, we beat ourselves. We didn't come out with the spark. It didn't help that UB midway through, or I shouldn't say midway, it was second half of the first half, final 10 minutes, went on a 21-2 run and just really played UV trademark defense, forced Canisius into making a lot of mistakes, and just really threw them off their game, and I think led it like 39-27 at halftime.
I agree. And it's not going to get any easier for Canisius when you got Siena and Iona up next, both playing pretty well.
Right. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a tough test for Canisius in the first half. I'm also, again, looking forward to that Iona-Niagara game because Iona came up here last year and Niagara upset them on the home court. You know, it's kind of like, welcome to Western New York, Rick Pitino. But I think it's going to be a really good matchup. And I really enjoyed watching that game because it really felt like it was an even matchup. I mean, Niagara really evened the floor against Iona. And I hope even though there's different personnel this year, they can do that again because, you know, Iona is the class. You know, they're probably going to be looked at. Them and Siena is the class of the Metro this season.
I agree. All right, Rachel, as usual, you did a fabulous job telling us
about
these Buffalo teams. I'm going to have you back soon because I want to talk about Buffalo and St. Bonaventure. Our next caller is teed up. So thank you. And
Jim.
We'll talk on Twitter about these games this weekend.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Thank you, Rachel. Thank you so much. It's Rachel Lindsay from the Buffalo News. What a great report about Niagara and Canisius who are coming to New Rochelle this weekend. All right. Now on the line, we have our number one caller, Kenny from Rye. Kenny, how are you?
James, how we doing?
I'm doing great. Did you enjoy this sports extravaganza this weekend? College football, pro football, tons of college basketball. This was a good way to live your life this weekend.
It was a good one. I enjoyed the, I guess it's the new tournament, the PK85 there. I thought that was a great lineup, and obviously Nike has a lot to do with that. But I thought the lineup they got to come out there was incredible. So it was a great weekend to see teams flex their muscle against the best in the business so far.
So I haven't talked about one game that I meant to talk about in the beginning. So if you will allow me, Kenny from Rye, to gloat for a second. But how cool was it that a team that doesn't have one single guy back from last year, it's a completely brand new team, the St. Bonaventure Bonnies, beat Notre Dame on Friday, 63-51. How about those Bonnies?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because we got a few calls from our Notre Dame friends asking about them, and I realized that they had, you know, and he's done this a few times, he kind of clears out the team because he keeps his lineup relatively short. It has a tendency to create frustration. But, I mean, overall, I thought shocking from what they did from a standpoint is you have basically a brand new team. But he does that all the time. He's obviously done it again.
So, yeah, they got, you know, he got lucky, Mark Schmidt. First of all, Mark Schmidt is a great coach. He's not a good coach. I mean, having watched St. Bonaventure since he got there, he is a great college basketball coach. And he had five really good players that did stay until they were seniors. And they had a great run, right? They went to the NCAA tournament 2 years ago. Last year, they went to the semifinals in the NIT. It was a great time for St. Bonaventure basketball, but they had to start all over. They did get some very good transfers. They got three guys. They got Darryl Banks from the St. Peter's team, one of the best players on that team that made the run. They got the best player on Holy Cross transferred in, and they also got from Hartford, the best player on Hartford. So they got three big transfers in and some pretty good freshmen because they was good last year. So they did get some good freshmen. The team is really coming together. They beat Notre Dame. Great win for the Bonnies.
Absolutely. And as you say, with a lot of moving pieces, he does an incredible job. I mean, obviously, from a perspective, he lost a couple of games in the beginning here that were, I guess you say, expected to some extent with all the new players. But from a perspective of putting yourself on the map early and, you know, what he did, it's incredible.
Yeah, he's 4-2 with a brand new team. Good job, Mark Schmidt. All right, Kenny, we're going to go to the commercial break. Hold on. We'll be right back.
We love that basketball.
All right, folks, we're back on College Hoops Chat. I'm Jim Misano, your host, and we have our number one caller, Kenny from Rye, on the line. Kenny, are you still there?
I am.
So I stayed up until 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturday night into Sunday morning to watch the Iona University Gales lose 86-76 to Santa Clara. I have to tell you, it was a troubling loss for Iona. It was a very interesting game because Iona got behind in the beginning of the second half by about 8-10 points. And Rick Pitino hadn't really used the press much because he was worried about foul trouble. Quinn Slezinski wasn't playing. The, their key power forward. That was a big loss. So basically, they were playing a center with four guards. Rick wasn't pressing. But then when they got behind, Rick said, screw it, I'm going to press. And then Iona's press got them not only back in the game, but got Iona a lead where they were winning by two with about 3 minutes to go. And then Iona stopped scoring. The game went to like half-court offenses. They didn't get the press going any further in the final 3 minutes. And Santa Clara blew them out. They went on a 10-0 run. A troubling game for the Iona University Gales.
Yeah, I mean, you can't look at that division anymore from what we talked about early in the year, which I thought was interesting, the WCC, from a perspective of where those teams have come. I mean, Santa Clara is committed a lot, from a standpoint of money to the program over the last few years, and the WCC has gotten more consistent on the back of they've ridden the success of Gonzaga. So I'm not sure this is too much of a shocker. I would put the WCC well ahead as a division of what Iona is normally playing. So I wouldn't take too much away from that. Plus, Iona had to travel as well. That makes it more difficult. But overall, I think you have to look at Santa Clara, as we talked about in the beginning of the year, as one of the better teams in the WCC.
I agree. And at the end of the day, Iona was winning the game with 3 minutes to go without one of their very best players in Quinn Lozinski. And the reason he mattered so much, him missing the game mattered so much, is that Quinn Lozinski is a power forward. Because he didn't play, they had two guards playing in the forward spots, where Santa Clara, as you're described, is kind of a big-time team in a bigger conference. They had guys that were 4 inches bigger than the Iona guys at the forward spots. It was a tough one for Iona.
Yeah, absolutely. From a standpoint, as you say, the WCC just falls right below the Pac-12 now. And to some extent, like the recreation of the Big East 2.0, the success of Villanova really drove the rest of the Big East 2.0 to kind of its success. And so a lot of people had us outside the Power Five, not significant, and then Villanova wins two championships, makes a big difference. Gonzaga's success has dragged everybody up in the WCC, and they're getting the best players now, whether it's UCF, Santa Clara, St. Mary's. They're all good teams.
I agree. All right, so Kenny, let me wrap up Iona with this. They're 2-2. I think everyone thought they were going to have a bit of a up and down start with the very hard non-conference schedule. They know what to expect them not to have Quinn Lozinski, a key player. Iona will be fine. They're playing really big games now. They're getting ready for the MAC conference. When the MAC conference gets going, Iona should be a really strong team in that conference.
Yeah, I mean, if they get Quinn back, it makes a big difference. But from a perspective of what Rick has laid out over the course of the last couple of years, is he's got the Gonzaga model. He keeps saying that. But he knows he's in a division where he's got to get outside help to make sure that he gets a bid for the NCAA tournament. So he said, I'm going to try and load up, and I'll take games where I can for better games than in the past of playing, down the street somewhere to get that national profile up. So I think Iona will be better off in the long term for that. And that was the weird thing about them last year. They kind of started out very well, had a good year, and then they kind of tailed at the end of the year. Maybe that situation, what they're learning from here, is going to help them and motivate them throughout the rest of the year.
Couldn't have said it better. I think Iona will be better off in January, February, March for playing all these tough games right now. Kenny from Ryan, we have our next caller. Thank you so much for being part of our show.
Thanks, Sam. See you next week.
Thanks so much. See you next week. All right, folks, let's go to our next phone line. We have our friend Neil Adler calling to talk about the Syracuse Orange. Neil, are you there?
I'm here. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. It's nice to chat with you on Twitter, so it's good to have you on the show today. And you are our Syracuse guy, and I've watched Syracuse play St. John's last week. I've watched a couple times now Syracuse Orange. It's been an up-and-down season. They're 3-3. A bad loss yesterday, although Bryant is much better than people give them credit for. How are you feeling about your Syracuse Orange?
Well, I guess the way I put it is I knew there might be, or I didn't know, but I figured there might be some growing pains early on, even with a not as tough on paper non-conference schedule this year as last year. It's a really young team. They have multiple seniors, but then they have a six-member recruiting class and a young big man transfer. They have 8 of their 12 scholarship players are underclassmen. And I just figured it might take some time for the team to gel on both ends of the floor, and that's definitely been the case so far. And the other thing I'll say, Jim, is, the loss to Bryant. Bryant was in an NCAA tournament team last year or this past spring, so it was Colgate, although Colgate really, really, they beat Syracuse bad at home for the second straight year. But the Bryant and St. John's losses, couple of things bounce Syracuse way and they win them, they're 5-1 and people aren't freaking out as much. But I do think that losing Judah Mintz for the second half of that Bryant game hurt, and they had a couple other guys that either didn't play much or didn't play at all. We'll see how everything shakes out. I'm hopeful that they'll be above 500 this year, but I wouldn't expect them to be in the top, half of the ACC.
Interesting. I think that's a very fair analysis of your team. Look, you have a freshman playing huge minutes as kind of your point guard. That's never easy for any team, particularly a team trying to come together in Judah Mintz, who's, by the way, a really talented player. You have to be impressed with what you see from him.
Oh, yeah. Judah Mintz, highest ranked of the six freshmen, played his senior year at the Oak Hill Academy, which is one of the best prep schools in the country. He was ranked in the mid-30s by ESPN, and I thought he was actually under-ranked by some of the recruiting services. But he's already getting, prior to the Bryant debacle, he was getting some, NBA draft buzz, although it's certainly really early on. But he's still leading the team in scoring. He's a capable three-point shooter, but he needs to improve from beyond the arc. But his ability, Jim, to get into the lane and push out in transition, and just his defensive tenacity, even in the zone, it's really fun to watch. And it was a shame what happened in that Bryant game with him and some of the Bryant players. But young people, we all make mistakes. He's just got to move on, and they've got a tough one tomorrow night against Illinois on the road.
So that'll be your toughest game you played all year. Illinois is terrific. I've watched them play when they beat UCLA, and they were awesome. But let me just go back, folks. So the last two games that Syracuse lost were games that Syracuse was in the whole game against St. John's and Bryant. As Neil said, they could have won those games. So I don't think Syracuse is having that bad a year, but they do need to come together fast, because not only do they have a tough game like Illinois coming up, but they have this ACC schedule coming up. So they don't have a lot. They have a month to get this act together. I do think Judah Mintz is tremendously talented, but he does play a little out of control. That's something they got to fix.
Yeah, I mean, he's, like I said, he's a freshman, and they've got five other freshmen. And I think Jim Boeheim is still figuring out rotations and what's going to work. He moved Joe Girard over to shooting guard, and he was great against Richmond in the last two games. Respectfully, he's been really bad. And, Justin Taylor, a freshman, stepped up this past game, and they've got a lot of really promising freshmen. But what are the rotations that are going to work the best for them? And, Jesse Edwards could be an all-ACC player, but he's got to stay out of foul trouble. And, it's just really kind of putting everything together on both ends of the floor. They lost some three-point shooting from last year, but I think they're a more athletic team. But even with more athleticism, they're a young team. So whether they're playing zone or man, maybe it's they're going to have some growing pains early on. I think the ACC, Virginia looks really good right now. Duke and UNC have both lost games. NC State looks pretty good. I mean, I think Syracuse could finish maybe in the middle of the pack. But, like you said, Jim, they've got Notre Dame to start ACC play this coming Saturday, and then they have a few more non-conference games. Hopefully they can pull things together and have a, successful season. But I think we definitely need to temper expectations with such a young team.
I agree. So the only game I watched from beginning to end for Syracuse was St. John's. And I thought both Chris Bell and Benny Williams are guys that could be big contributors eventually.
Absolutely.
All right,
absolutely.
All right, Neil, there's the music, unfortunately. Good luck to your Syracuse Orange. We'll get you back on in the new year to see how they're doing.
Thanks, Jim. Take care, buddy. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Thank you, Neil. All right, that's Neil Adler, our Syracuse guy on the show. We'll see how Syracuse does this season. A historic, really good team in the state of New York. All right, folks, that's our show. Hope you enjoyed it. I think we had a couple of good angles we covered. I'm Jim Bassano. This is College Hoops Chat. We'll see you next Monday night at 8 o'clock. Thanks for being part of the show, and thanks for tuning in tonight.